Take a vacation from your bills, pay off credit cards, and save thousands of dollars after a simple phone call to Golden Oak Lending. Visit goldenoaklending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
NMLS 114937.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you love your phone, but not your carrier, just switch to T-Mobile. You can keep your phone, keep your number, and we'll help pay it off up to $800 per line. You can also use our savings calculator to compare our plans and streaming benefits against Verizon and AT&T. So, switch and keep your phone, keep your number, and keep more of your moolah at T-Mobile.com.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported in 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
And the first delivery is raked into left field for a hit over the third baseman's head, and it's going to the corner. Donnie is headed to third base, and there's no play there. In the second is Arenado, and the Cardinals in business here in the third inning. A single and a double and nobody out.
Yo, Paulie! Paulie's
a great name.
Yo, Paulie!
What'd you do for Paulie? Anything?
Me, Paulie! I was responsible!
Paulie, we're here because of you!
What a weekend for the St. Louis Cardinals, who started their season without a loss. They are 3-0 to start the year for the first time since 2006. They sweep a series to begin their season. They've got the Angels of Los Angeles and or Anaheim. They are in town tonight at Busch Stadium. We go to the guest line and we bring in Matt Pauley, who's our sports fella, host of pre- and post-game coverage for the Cardinals, host of the Redbird Rush Hour, which happens at 5 o'clock every day when pregame doesn't get in the way, and then, of course, Sports Open Line. Matt Pauley, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you guys?
Great.
We're doing great.
For the Cardinals, man.
Fantastic. They didn't do anything poorly this weekend. They hit, they pitched, they were good in the field. I mean, that was a well put together three games for the Cardinals.
Yeah, Matt, we were talking about how I know, you know, spring training doesn't mean anything, but a little worried when the Cardinals as a whole weren't hitting in Florida. And then they have their opening weekend like they did, where they weren't just hitting, but they were hitting in clutch situations.
Yeah, so that was one of the issues last year, right? That they could not get a hit with runners in scoring position, and they did that a lot this weekend. Yeah, it's three games. It means the results of these three games mean just a little bit more than, you know, absolutely nothing. It's three games. It's a tiny sample size, but I was just running their numbers compared to the rest of the division. I tweeted this out. Their runs per game over the weekend, 6.3. Number two in the division was Milwaukee at 4.7. They had a 306 average this weekend. That was number one in the division. Milwaukee at 236 was second. They had a 909 OPS this weekend. Cincinnati was second in the division at 605. So, I mean, they dominated compared to what the other teams in the division did. They also had the best ERA, the best fielding percentage of every team in the division. So I keep saying just three games doesn't mean much, but what we can say is they had a really, really good weekend, and it was good to see.
I'm going to ask you about the Brewers in a moment as it pertains to their opening series and something interesting that poor Nestor Cortez. Woof. Anyway, I know. Matt loves it so much. Your former team got just pounded by the Yankees. So we'll talk about that in a second. But Nolan Arenado had a good weekend, too. Not only did he get really good ovations from the crowds, but, you know, for a guy who thought he may not be here when the season started, we don't know how his year is going to go. We know how it's gone the last couple of seasons for him and not really Arenado-like. So it was nice to have him produce the way he did in the opening series, and just hoping it continues now.
Yeah, so I'm going to go a little nerdy here on you, and I know that people sometimes kind of shake their heads when they start hearing about underlying numbers, but this means something. I'll give credit. There's a guy on Twitter, at @JacobE_STL. He found this information. I saw it, and I thought it tells a really good story. Last year, it took Nolan Arenado 15 games to register 10 swings with a bat speed above 75 miles per hour. In less than three games, he got to 10 swings at that. So what that tells you, again, nobody's putting bat swing speed on the back of a baseball card. I understand that. But what that tells you is bat speed leads to production. It leads to damage. It leads to extra base hits. It leads to home runs. It leads to all the things that Arenado did not do last year. Now, there's nothing guaranteed he's going to keep that up. He is someone who's been a little bit prone to injuries in his career. If his back starts to get a little bit achy, that bat speed really slows down. But for him to do in less than three games what it took him to do 15 games last year on one of these underlying numbers, I think that tells a really good story that start to give a little bit of an indication on why Arenado looked good this weekend.
And for Nolan Gorman, that's the person who is going to lose playing time as a result of Arenado being here. Well, he took advantage in the one game he was able to play, four at bats and three hits and a home run included there. So
the one he didn't get a hit on was a hard hit ball. I mean, yeah. Gorman looked good at the plate yesterday.
And we know he can be streaky. I mean, that's a thing that's been true of him since he's been here. But, you know, when he has games like that, or, you know, how much does it really affect? And again, it's very, very small sample size. But how much does it affect the sort of playing time he will end up getting? And will he force his way into the lineup?
It should impact it. As a manager, if you're Oliver Marmol, you try to put the best lineup on the field every day. So if every time you put Nolan Gorman in there, he produces, you're going to put him in there more. And it creates that internal competition that you want. Like if you're Alec Burleson, that pushes you a little bit. Burleson did not have an especially great start to the season. In his three games, he was 2-for-11, a 182 average. And Burleson seems to be the guy who kind of pushed in front of Gorman for that DH spot in what is the base lineup. So if Gorman keeps hitting and Burleson doesn't, you can make that switch there. And if at some point in time Gorman stops hitting and Burleson gets hot, guess what? You switch it out. So going with the hot hand is something that you should do over a 162-game season. And it's not just like an immediate reaction. You know, if Jordan Walker or if Nolan Arenado, like if anybody all of a sudden goes cold for a few days, that doesn't mean, oh, let's go find somebody else to put in that spot. But there is something to be said for looking at the guys who are hot at any given moment and trying to get them in the lineup as much as possible.
It also, what's great about what happened this weekend is they did it without any contribution offensively from Wilson Contreras, who's 0-for-14 now. And I am not at all worried about him offensively. He's going to hit. That's not, unless he's hurt, he's not a problem. But if they can get production from everybody else on nights where he doesn't contribute, that would be big for the offense.
It would. So, you know, I had somebody say on one of my postgame shows over the week, it was on Saturday, and he said, man, Wilson Contreras looks terrible. And my answer is no, he doesn't. He's not getting hits. But especially in that first game on Thursday, man, he had some fantastic at-bats. He just kind of had some bad luck, and he didn't get hits. I thought Saturday he did not look as good as he looked Thursday, but he didn't look terrible. He still had some nice at bats. And I even think, he didn't strike out. He went 0-for-5 yesterday, but he didn't strike out a single time. So he's right there. I'm not concerned about him. He had a good spring. He's the most dangerous hitter in the lineup, without a doubt. He's going to be just fine.
Not even a little worried about him.
Not even a little. No.
Nope.
So Contreras, as you mentioned, had a good spring. Hasn't hit yet, but you're not worried about it. Mason Wynn struggled in spring and he hasn't had a hit yet. Are you worried about him?
Yes, that's a very different situation. Wynn did not look especially good in spring. I kind of left open the possibility that all that was going on in spring was him just working on some things. You know, pitch selection was one of the big things for him. So I had thought maybe he would just kind of turn it on once the season got started. We have not seen that from him yet. Yesterday, he has two strikeouts. He has struck out five times in his first nine at-bats over his first three games. I think there's reason to at least be cognizant. I don't know if it's crossed over the line into concern. But if it is concern, I think it's a valid concern. Wynn doesn't have a multi-year track record in the big leagues. He was very good last year. but he hasn't put it together multiple years. He had a tough spring, and now he's had a tough start to the season. And there's not really the opportunity on the roster to be able to give him a break. They don't have a backup shortstop. If they have to play somebody there, they're going to have to go with Brendan Donovan. And Donovan's going to be respectable there, but I mean, that's not really a spot that you want to put him. So Wynn's going to be asked to play every single day. He's going to be asked to work himself out of this, and hopefully it is something that comes around.
So tonight, Miles Michaelis is going to get the start against the Angels, but so far in terms of starting pitching and bullpen work, it's been, I mean, Gray and Fetty and Pallante have all been pretty good in their first starts of the season. So you're hoping that Michaelis continues that, because they're going to need it from him this year.
Yeah, the team has an ERA at 2 right now. So obviously just about every single player who has gone out there onto the mound has done a nice job. So the question is, what do you see from Miles Michaelis? Because Michaelis is a guy that has struggled over his last two seasons specifically. He has a +5 ERA over his last 2 years, just from last year. He worked on a lot of things during spring. He's trying to throw some more pitches off the plate. You know, he throws so many strikes. He throws too many strikes. He throws too many middle strikes. And that's been something that he's been cognizantly working on. So if he's ahead on a guy 0-2, it's okay to waste a pitch. And when you waste a pitch, that doesn't mean just throw it way outside, but just go a little bit off the zone where it's going to be a really tough pitch for a hitter to do something with. So in spring, he looked pretty good. 3.66 ERA, 19 2/3 innings, only gave up 8 runs, only gave up 20 hits, 11 strikeouts, only 5 walks. So he is somebody who historically has been successful in spring. And that hasn't always translated into good numbers in the regular season. So his task tonight against the Angels is to go out there and continue doing what he did this spring.
So as I mentioned, first of all, tonight's pregame show with Matt Pauly is at 5:50, and the first pitch is at 6:45. Cardinals continue their season, trying to go 4-0 to start the year. Wanted to talk to you about what happened to the Brewers, and they got absolutely clobbered. And Nestor Cortez, I had never seen this before, and this includes a home run from Paul Goldschmidt, who hit leadoff in that first game of the season, and it was him, Aaron Judge, and now it's escaping
Bellinger.
Yep. 3 pitches, 3 home runs off Nestor Cortez and the Brewers.
That, to start the game.
Start the game.
Right. First 3 pitches thrown by Nestor Cortez in the bottom of the first inning.
Who's now with the Brewers.
He was part of the Devin Williams trade in the offseason. The Brewers sent Devin Williams to the Yankees. The Yankees sent a bunch of players back to the Brewers, including Nestor Cortez. So he's facing off against his former team. First 3 pitches that he throws all get hit out. He gives up 5 home runs in 2 innings before he gets removed. Yankees hit 9 home runs in the game. That is one short of the major league record set by Toronto, I believe, in the 80s. Wow. That was the Brewers. And by the way, then the Brewers follow that up the next day by giving up 12 runs yesterday. The Brewers team ERA through the first 3 games of the season is 12.75. It's not good. And that's just something you've never seen before for Cortez to go out there 3 pitches, 3 home runs.
Also, what was really incredible in that game, and we discovered it because I guess people noticed how different some of the Yankees bats, like their actual physical baseball bats, looked. And I've heard them referred to as torpedoes or bowling pins.
They look like kind of swollen in the middle, or like because the weight has been pushed down.
They taper at the end.
Yes, it's not an even distribution of weight.
They were designed by an MIT physicist, and apparently they are legal. So
They look illegal.
But they're not. So are teams going to adopt this? Are more players around baseball going to use them?
I don't know. It's a good question. You know, Aaron Judge did not use one, and he had a pretty good weekend. He hit 4 home runs in the 3 games. One of the Twins players had one. Ryan Jeffers for the Twins used it against the Cardinals, and Jeffers is hitting .125 right now, so it's not helping him out. I don't like it in the sense that historically, if you've gotten a player to hit the ball at that spot of the bat as a pitcher, basically you've done your job, because there's probably not going to be solid contact. And now there is solid contact. So that, to me, that kind of changes the game. So I don't love that. But in the same sense, That type of bat is actually being used a little bit more than I think people realize. And that guy who worked for the Yankees doesn't even work for the Yankees anymore.
He's a Marlins coach.
Marlins guy. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think Major League Baseball should at least take a look at it. But I'm not overly bothered by it. I need more of a sample size than three games from the Yankees to see it.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, before we let you go, I do have to bring up a gutsy victory by the St. Louis Blues. Mm-hmm. Against Colorado, that was an 11-game home win streak. The Blues extended their winning streak to 9 games. The last 2 minutes of that game were pandemonium. Players diving left and right, blocking shots. Justin Falk had a 1-minute, 45-second shift, which is the hockey equivalent of an ultra marathon. Like, that's like your body's just dead at that point. Mm-hmm. Colorado had 8 shot attempts at the end of that game, and the Blues... hang on. It's starting to feel pretty special, Matt.
Yeah. You said it there. What a win that was. And there's been a bunch of wins like that. Even, you know, when I was walking out of the ballpark the night of opening night, they had the Blues game up on the big screen out there over in the Ballpark Village, and they were down in that game. And then, you know, I listened to a little bit driving home, and they stayed down. And I get home, and then, you know, do a few things. I sit down on my computer, and boom, I look at the score, and they won against Nashville 3-2. For them to, you know, that game against Colorado, in many ways it felt like, okay, you got your point. Get to overtime, you got your point. Mm-hmm. Well, they do the opposite of that. They're able to score late. They get their 2 points. It doesn't really matter if Colorado gets, you know, none or one or whatever. It doesn't matter. But this is a lot of fun right now. Man, this is a lot of fun. They've got like an 85% chance right now to be a playoff team. It is incredible. It is remarkable. It is unexpected. Even with Jim Montgomery, and as much as I really like him, you know, he had been a coach. He'd been with the team for a while, and they still hadn't found themselves out of that inconsistent up and down roller coaster. And then something happened, and this team is on a really special run. And I promise you, there is no team in the NHL that's going to want to face the Blues in the playoffs.
They are 6 points ahead of Vancouver. The Blues have 7 games left to go. Canucks have 8 games left to go. The Wild also have 8 games left to go, and the Blues are tied with them in points. So that's your 1-2 wild card teams right now. So, I mean, it would take, I don't even know why I want to say it, but it would just take an absolute horrible collapse for that to not happen, I would think, at this point.
Oh, the only problem is Calgary has a bunch of games in hand.
They have 3 games in hand, yep, and they are 7 points back.
Right. So that if Calgary wins all of those games in hand, then it gets a little tighter.
Just keep take care of business.
Care of business.
Keep stacking points. All right. So you've got Redbird Rush Hour leading into the pregame show tonight.
That's right. And then, what's the game? I should know this. What's the game time tonight?
6:45. Your pregame 6:45. Show is at 5:50.
Thanks. Thank you.
So Redbird Rush Hour with you and Kevin Wheeler talking Cardinals baseball from 5 until 5:50, and then the pregame show, and then the ball game tonight.
Okay. I've written that down, Chris. Thank you for telling me my schedule for the evening.
Anything else you need me to tell you about your schedule?
What should I have for dinner tonight?
Corn on the cob, and that's it.
Just corn on the cob?
Yeah.
That's not enough at all.
Elotes. Have that instead.
You need some protein, Matt. Don't listen to this guy.
Thanks, guys.
Yo, Paulie, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later.